Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about Anna Karenina, Part 1, Chapter 28. Why have the children given up on Anna? Swim, said the mumfish, he said, Tolstoy actually gives us a choice. The natural inconstancy of children, or they sensed that Anna was distracted, and so they steered clear of her. I'm an aunt who swept into town to visit my brother and his wife, and two nephews. There was always a fair bit of excitement, and a great deal of attention paid by the nephews when I first showed up. That quickly dissipated, and I became part of the background noise of all the other adults in their lives. Unless Anna was directly shooing them off and actively adversely affecting their lives, which it doesn't appear to be the case, I'm going with the inconstancy of children. Inconstancy. I don't know what that word means, actually. Is it inconsistency? No, inconstancy means changeability. I think Tolstoy just brings it up as a possibility to emphasize that Vronsky has had on Anna. Sorry, to emphasize the effect that... I read that completely wrong. I think Tolstoy just brings it up as a possibility to emphasize the effect that Vronsky has had on Anna. I quite like how Dolly is presented in this chapter, says Swim, said the Mummifishy. She's warm and caring and shrewdly points out how easily Vronsky appears to switch affections. Poor Anna, she knows, she hurt Kitty. She knows that being attracted to Vronsky would not end well, hence the hasty leaving of Moscow. But I think she has been starved for the type of attention that Vronsky is giving that she simply cannot help herself. I'm curious to be introduced to her husband. Wait. Oh. Anna's husband? Wait. Oh, yeah. Anna's got a husband. Cephalopod Surprise said, you're right, this chapter did a lot towards making me care about Dolly, and I'm ready to meet Anna's husband as well. There is something interesting going on with them. I am Norwegian said, there's a weird energy in the Oblonsky household after the ball, which the children responded to. I'm not sure what to make of Anna. She's back to her affable self, and it's impossible not to like her. Yet the day before, she seemed more like a femme fatale. Moving forward, I think we're going to jump a lot around between the countryside, Moscow and Petersburg. The Oblonskys live in Moscow, yes? Tech Griffey said, yes, they do. But remember, the forest Steve wants to sell, there's probably a house in the countryside attached to that belonging to Dolly, so the Oblonskys could potentially move around as well. Although Steve's job suggests he's pretty much stationed in Moscow. Minnie Owl says, maybe Anna hasn't paid attention to the children as much because her thoughts have been somewhere else. Children definitely notice such things. Gwynardle said, it was so nice to get back to Anna after Levin and his weird brother. My favorite part of the chapter was Dolly pointing out how Anna sounded like Steva and Anna denying it. I think Dolly is extremely perceptive here. Techrific said, I suspect the children must have sensed the tension in the household, and Anna's arrival provided a respite from that. They could concentrate on this new person and play with her, get distracted by her. It seems it was a short respite and the realities of the household intruded. The fact that something in Anna had changed probably contributed to the shift in the children's attitude towards her, but I think the main thing is the tension between their parents. That is the heart of the matter. Yep, all right. There we go. Breezed through that. That was all the conversation we had about that chapter. Thanks to those who participated in the conversation. Without any further ado, I'm sorry. I was just 99% asleep. And I woke up going, oh, I've got to do my podcast. So I'm a little bit dazed and confused right now. I wonder how much that shows. I wonder if you're listening to it and thinking, geez, Anda sounds dazed and confused right now. Anyway, moving right along.
Oh.
Excuse me, I got attacked by a yawn. Patreon.com/TheHemingwayList if you want to support the podcast using Patreon. You can do that for a dollar a month. This is chapter 29, which goes like this. Well, that's all over, thank heaven, was Anna's first thought when she had taken leave of her brother, who stood to the last moment, obstructing the entrance to the railway carriage. She sat down beside her maid, Anushka, and peered around the dimly lit sleeping compartment. Thank heaven, tomorrow I shall see Sereza and Alexis Alexandrovich again, and my good accustomed life will go on as of old. With the same preoccupied mind she had had all that day, Anna prepared with pleasure and great deliberation for the journey. With her deft little hands she unlocked her red bag, took out a small pillow which she placed on her knees, and locked the bag again. Then she carefully wrapped up her feet and sat down comfortably. An invalid lady was already going to bed. Two other ladies began talking to Anna. One, a fat old woman, while wrapping up her feet, remarked upon the heating of the carriage. Anna said a few words in answer, but not foreseeing anything interesting from the conversation, asked her maid to get out her reading lamp, fixed it to the arm of her seat, and took a paper knife and an English novel from her handbag. At first she could not read. For a while the bustle of people moving around disturbed her, and when the train had finally started it was impossible not to listen to the noises. Then there was the snow beating against the window on her left, to which it stuck, and the sight of the guard, who passed through the carriage closely wrapped up and covered with snow on one side. Also the conversation about the awful snowstorm which was raging outside, distracted her attention. was raging outside, distracting her attention. And so it went on and on, the same jolting and knocking, the same beating of the snow on the window pane, the same rapid changes from steaming heat to cold and back again to heat, the gleam of some faces through the semi-darkness and the same voices. But at last Anna began to read and to follow what she read. Anushka was already dozing, her broad hands with a hole in one of the gloves holding the red bag on her lap. Anna read and understood, but it was unpleasant to read, that is to say, to follow the reflection of other people's lives. She was too eager to live herself. When she read how the heroine of the novel nursed a sick man, she wanted to move about the sick room with noiseless footsteps. When she read of a member of parliament making a speech, she wished to make that speech. When she read how Lady Mary rode to hounds, teased her sister-in-law, and astonished everybody by her boldness, she wanted to do it herself. But there was nothing to be done, so she forced herself to read, while her little hand toyed with the smooth paper knife. The hero of the novel had nearly attained to his English happiness of a baronetcy and an estate, and Anna wanted to go to the estate with him, when she suddenly felt that he must have been ashamed, and she was ashamed of the same thing. But what was he ashamed of? What am I ashamed of? She asked herself with indignant surprise. She put down her book, leaned back, and clasped the paper knife tightly in both hands. There was nothing to be ashamed of. She called up all her Moscow memories. They were all good and pleasant. She recalled the ball, and Vronsky, and his humble, enamoured gaze, and their reflections, and with one another. There was nothing to be ashamed of, and yet at that very point of her recollections, when she remembered Vronsky, the feeling of shame grew stronger, and some inner voice seemed to say to her, warm, very warm, burning. Well, what of it? She finally said to herself with decision, changing her position on the seat. What does it signify? Am I afraid to look straight at it? What of it? Just as if there existed or could not exist, or could exist, between me and this officer lady, any relations differing from those with other acquaintances. She smiled disdainfully and again took up her book, but now she absolutely could not understand what she was reading. She passed her paper knife over the window pane, then pressed its cold, smooth surface against her cheek and almost laughed aloud. Suddenly overcome with unreasoning joy, she felt that her nerves were being stretched like strings drawing tighter and tighter around pegs. She felt her eyes opening wider, her fingers and toes nervously moving, and something inside her stopping her breath. and all the forms and sounds in the swaying semi-darkness around struck her with unusual vividness. Momentary doubts kept occurring in her mind as to whether the train was moving forward or backwards, or standing still. Was it Anushka who was sitting beside her, or a stranger? And am I here myself? Am I myself another? She was afraid of giving way to these delirious thoughts. Something seemed to draw her to them, but she had the power to give way to them, or to resist. To get over it, she rose, threw off her wrap, and took off the cape of her coat. She came to her senses for a moment, and knew that the lean peasant in the long nankin coat, with a button missing, who had come into the compartment, was the carriage stoker, and was looking at the thermometer, and that the wind and snow rushed in when he opened the door, but afterwards everything again became confused. The peasant in the long coat started gnawing at something on the wall. The old woman began stretching her legs, the whole length of the carriage, which she filled with a black cloud. Then something squeaked and clattered in a dreadful manner, as if someone was being torn to pieces. Then a blinding red light appeared, and at last everything was hidden by a wall. Anna felt as if she had fallen through the floor, but all this did not seem dreadful but amusing. The voice of a man wrapped up and covered with snow shouted something just above her ear. She rose and came to herself, understanding that they had stopped at a station and that this was the guard. She asked Anushka to give her the cape she had removed and a shawl, and putting them on, she moved to the door. "Are you going out?" asked Anushka. "Yes, I want a breath of air. It's so hot in here." She opened the carriage door. The snow and wind rushed towards her and had a tussle with her hair for the door. And this too struck her as amusing. She went out. The wind seemed only to have waited for her. It whistled merrily and tried to seize and carry her off, but she held on to the cold doorpost and held down her shawl. Then stepping on to the platform, she moved away from the carriage. The wind blew boisterously into the little porch of the carriage, but on the platform, sheltered by the train, it was quiet. With enjoyment, she drew in full breaths of the snowy, frosty air as she stood beside her carriage, looking round at the platform and the lighted station. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Have your say over at the subreddit. I look forward to seeing what you guys have to say about that one. Thank you very much for listening today, and I'll see you tomorrow.